Glory, glory. Oh, Jesus keeps a taking me higher and higher, baby. Oh, yes. Praise Jesus and praise you. God bless you. God bless you, etc. Oh, I don't deserve it, but yes, I am blessed to have you, the listeners, on this a beautiful God-given day. It's a harvest of podcast glory. Yes, it is. Oh, it's me, Matt Rogers, and we are highly favored today. I mean, someone must have really touched us on this morning, because we are celebrating the Oscar-winning Jesus loving 2021 film, The Eyes of Tammy Faye. Okay, if you guys don't mind, I'm going to stop with all the evangelist shit because honestly, it's making me a little dizzy and nauseous. I am, let's just say I'm a lapsed Roman Catholic. One time I went to a funeral with my mother a few years ago and she leaned over and said, I don't think I'm going to go receive communion because I don't really go to church. And I said, yeah, me neither. I'm not going up there. And she said, if you go up there, this place is going to burn to the ground. And then we laughed and a grieving woman in front of us turned around and shook her head at us and we stopped laughing. Anyway, back to the film. You know who wasn't as judgmental as that grieving woman that day? Tammy Faye. For those of you not familiar with televangelism in the 70s and 80s or gay iconography in general, Tammy Faye Messner, formerly Baker, was an American evangelist, singer, author, talk show host, and television personality who gained notice for her work with the PTL Club, which was a televangelist program she co-founded with her husband Jim Baker in 1974. They had hosted their own puppet show series for local programming in the early 1960s. Messner also had a career as a recording artist. In 1978, she also, with Baker, built Heritage USA, a Christian theme park, which, even as a lapsed Christian, does entice me, I have to say. I heard there was a slide, like a big slide. Praise Jesus. Messner gained significant publicity when Jim Baker was indicted, convicted, and imprisoned on numerous counts of fraud and conspiracy in 1989, resulting in the dissolution of the PTL Club. She then divorced Baker in 1992 and married Roe Messner. She was diagnosed with colon cancer in 1996, from which she unfortunately suffered intermittently for over a decade before dying of the disease in 2007. During her career, Messner was noted for her eccentric and glamorous persona, as well as for moral views that diverged from those of many mainstream evangelists, particularly her advocacy for LGBT people and reaching out to HIV and AIDS patients at the height of the AIDS epidemic. The Eyes of Tammy Faye explores most, if not all, of that, starting with Tammy Faye's childhood and following her through her success, her divorce with Jim Baker, through to the end of her life. We see her rise from humble, evangelical beginnings to falling for Jim Baker and building a Christian broadcasting network with him. At the film's core, we see how putting blind faith in corrupt leaders, in empty proclamations of faith, and in fame led to her fall from grace. Amen to that. I think we've all been there. Maybe not. Released by Searchlight Pictures, the film was a critical success and won two Academy Awards, one for Best Makeup and Hairstyling and another for Best Actress for Jessica Chastain for her fantastic performance as Tammy. She also won the Critics' Choice Award and the Screen Actors Guild Award in an extremely competitive Best Actress year. Chastain was also a producer for this film, and all of the success comes after years and years of development after one day, long ago, she discovered the documentary The Eyes of Tammy Faye by Randy Barbato and Fenton Bailey, who, fun fact, are also the producers of RuPaul's Drag Race. Yeah, she was back in a hotel room on a press tour for Zero Dark Thirty in 2012, flipped on the TV, and there was the Eyes of Tammy Faye documentary. Chastain immediately knew she had to get the rights to the story, did, and 7 years later began shooting the film. In an interview with W Magazine for its Best Performances issue, Chastain said the following, and I quote, "I saw the interview she did with Steve Peters in 1985, and I was blown away. This is a time when the government wasn't even talking about the AIDS epidemic. People were dying, and families were being torn apart because of homophobia. And no one really understands because no one's talking about what's going on. Tammy went against conservative evangelical communities and brought Steve Peters onto her show. He was an openly gay minister with AIDS, and she asked him about what it was like. And then she looked into the camera and she educated millions of Christian followers on what it means to be Christian, that you love through anything. And that's the way with Jesus. It is a radical act of love that we should be talking about more than her mascara." End quote. That interview with Steve Peters is one of the centerpieces of this film, which really focuses and fleshes out Tammy Faye's allyship to the LGBTQ community. In many ways, Tammy Faye herself was a walking queer narrative. I love this movie. I have now seen it 3 times. It actually was one of the first movies I saw back in theaters, during the pandemic when it was safe to go. And I'm so excited to have on the HBO Max Movie Club today, the director of this film, Michael Showalter himself, comedian, actor, writer, director, and producer who you probably know from The State, Wet Hot American Summer, God, etc. He's a co-creator and co-producer of Search Party. All seasons are streaming now on HBO Max, by the way. And he directed the incredible film The Big Sick. He's also an executive producer and director of I Love That For You, streaming now on Showtime, which, get this, is a television program that I am on. Had to plug it. Very excited to welcome Michael Showalter to talk about his film, The Eyes of Tammy Faye, right now. Oh, well, we do not deserve it, but we are blessed here today on the HBO Max Movie Club because it's the director of this goddamn film. Sorry to take the Lord's name in vain on this here, the episode that really will get into the Lord's work that is The Eyes of Tammy Faye. Michael Showalter, here you fucking are. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, Matt.
Hi, babe. I haven't seen you since the big Oscar win, which I certainly did call on set. I don't know if you remember this.
Maybe.
Yeah, well, you were sort of busy directing I Love That For You, streaming now on Showtime. Sorry about that, HBO Max. But I did say in between takes, I was like, you know, Michael, The Eyes of Tammy Faye is one of my favorite films of the year. And I think Jessica's winning that Oscar. So congrats.
Thank you. It was a great night.
And makeup hairstyling deserved.
And makeup hairstyling, yep. And it was, for all of us, it was a really, I can't put it into words. It's like, you know, just this incredible sense of gratification. And we were all like so happy for Jessica and it just meant a lot to all of us. It was a great moment.
She really seems like someone who is, obviously she produced the film and has been working on this since 2012 when she got the rights, but she seems like someone who commits in every single aspect. And I remember you did say that you really like appreciate her as a collaborator and a person. I wonder if you can talk about working with her a little bit.
I am a fan of Jessica's acting. So I sort of was like into her as an actress, but I sort of started to notice, I don't know, like out in the world, like she seemed like this very unique person.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just started to sort of enjoy her enthusiasm and her, yeah, like there was this sort of like she's someone who I think really marches to the beat of her own drum. And I just really appreciate that. And she sort of sticks her neck out and she takes risks. And I really admired her. So I was incredibly excited to work with her. We actually had a different project that we were working on before Tammy Faye. It's a long story how I wound up being the director of that movie. What was the question?
I just was literally asking, what's it like to work with her? And you're giving a gorgeous answer.
Oh, okay. They had a director. That director wasn't on the movie anymore. The movie that we were going to make didn't happen, but maybe it will one day. And then it was like, hey, would you, you know, they had some, I think they talked to some people. I took a meeting. I said how passionate I was about the script and working with Jessica and everything. And, miraculously I got the job, and then we started working on the movie. And yeah, she is, no one knew the material better than Jessica. No one knew the character or anyone or any of the character. Well, I shouldn't say that. By the time we started shooting the movie, the other actors knew their characters very well, but she is a true force.
Yeah.
And was very, very, very involved with every stage of the production. But I will say, as an actress, once we started making the movie and we were just on set every day, she was just an actress in the movie, and she was really, that part was great. She's you know, she's a director's dream, as they say.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask about, she does, and I say this in the best way, she seems to me to sort of be like an acting nerd.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, she seems like she really lives and breathes it. And one thing that I pull whenever I watch this, and I have now watched it like 3 or 4 times, I love the movie. She's so emotional. She's so a laugh away from a tear in every scene in a way that I assume Tammy Faye Baker also was. But as an actor, and I have to imagine that's part of her humanity as well. Like, she seems like such an emotional person. You talk about how outspoken she is. I wonder, in working with her as an actor in this movie, watching her manage her emotion, because you only have so much of that to give. Did she do a lot of takes? Do you guys do a lot of takes on these scenes where she's crying and brimming over?
Good question. I not an insane amount. She's very, a real pro. So she brings it, you know, so she's giving you, sometimes you'll work with an actor that needs to kind of build up to it a little bit. She's right there on the first take. You know, I always want to give actors, you know, if the actors want another take, I'm always, you know, there's like, I'm good. Are you good? And then maybe sometimes she'd be like, no, let's do a few more or whatever.
I'm going to remember that for next season of I Love That For You, by the way. I'm going to take
I think we did unlimited that. Takes. I think we did. You asked, I actually think, remember that one we did by the door?
Yeah, by the door.
You know what I'm talking about? The
of
one
course.
Where you say, no, you don't. You don't remember. I remember.
There were a lot of scenes me by the door.
By the door. Okay. Well, it was the scene by the door and you were like, Mike, can we do it again? And I was like, sure, Matt, let's do it again.
And then remember, I nailed it. I knew I needed that.
And then after you did that one, we all pumped our fists and we were like, yes,
yes,
print it.
So I would imagine that, like, it's sort of like in the canon of actors you've worked with, it's like me, Jessica.
Oh,
sort of descending order.
Yes, you, then Jessica, then
Mr. Garfield,
Sally Field. Now I'm just going to list the amazing actors I've worked with. Sally Field.
Yeah, I'm really wanting to give you a platform here to do just that.
Then Holly Hunter.
Mm-hmm, never forget.
Then
Ray Romano himself.
Ray Romano. Sam Waterston.
Right, but what's important is I'm up there at the top. Just a skosh over Jessica.
It's honestly not even close.
Another thing I truly loved about her in this is the singing. And I've been watching interviews with her and she talks like, oh, you know, I wasn't comfortable singing. Yeah. You know, singing was new for me. She's got like this very big, bright voice, which to me feels like someone who is a trained singer. And the musical numbers are shot so well. And I just wanted to know, like, which it seemed like it might have been different for you. I don't know how much music you've worked with, but in shooting the musical numbers with her, what was that like, that collaboration?
Well, we had pre-recorded all the songs. So we were, you know, she was somewhat lip syncing on when we were shooting on the day. But we started working on the music for the movie very early. We shot the movie in November and we were recording those songs in June with this great Nashville music producer named Dave Cobb and our amazing music supervisor at Searchlight, John Houlihan. And it was very cool, like me and Jessica and the music guys in the studio cutting tracks and stuff.
Cutting tracks, you know, in the booth, finding new stuff.
Exactly. Like, and she was very, I think, because she's a perfectionist. I think she's nervous. I think she's nervous. Maybe the nervousness, she'll probably, if she listens to this, she'll probably text me and be like, that's not it. She wants to be amazing at what she does. And so if she's going to do something, she wants to be really good at it. And so I'm sure.
I love that about her.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm sure that some of the nervousness is, what if I'm not really good at this? Because I think she has great respect for
singers,
what it takes to be a great singer and what it requires of somebody. And you don't just like open your mouth and start singing and all of a sudden you're a good singer. You need to train and you need to work at it. And so I think it was out of a respect for what it is to be good at singing that maybe she was nervous, because I'm sure that the people that she's wanting to impress are people who know what good singing is.
Right, exactly. And now she's playing Tammy Wynette.
Yeah, Tammy Wynette.
I can't wait for that. It's really interesting though. Like, I often find that in order to become a good singer in the beginning, what helped me, because I do sing a little bit, is
Oh, really?
I started to, yeah, Yeah, there's a lot that you don't know about me.
What's your style? What's your musical
style?
I'm sort of,
if you can imagine, like, sort of Justin Timberlake, if he, like, had it, you know what I mean? Can you imagine a world where he sort of had the X Factor?
Are you, like, pop music? Or, like, what's your genre? Well,
it's sort of like a pop R&B thing, if you can believe that. Because I know you know I have soul.
What's your, like, do you have a band? Are you in a band? I know that we're here to talk about Tammy Faye, but...
No, it's okay. We can talk about me. I have a comedy special called Have You Heard of Christmas? And it's an original Christmas album. So it's sort of like a stand-up special that's disguised as a Christmas thing. But I tour with that every year. And that's sort of... So I've been singing for like years and years. And the reason I bring that up is because in the beginning, I also was like, I don't know how to do this. But then I find you get good at it by almost making fun of it. And so I would imagine that, like, especially for a lot of sketch comedians who often, like, you just find yourself wandering into music and it's like, oh, here we all are arriving at this task and none of us are actual singers. But you can sort of hack your way into it by almost making fun of it. And Tammy Faye Baker has such a big campy sound that I would imagine that, you know, in soaking yourself in all of her music and becoming a fan, it's actually easy to mimic her and then discover your own talent in what she does. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I noticed Tammy Faye's talking voice is very high pitched and squeaky, but her when she sings, it's very operatic. And she's like very glottal and operatic, which is so adorable.
Yeah, it's almost like she's coming at it from like a comedy perspective as well. It's like it's almost like talking to her puppet persona as well in her singing career.
Interesting.
Then again, you never really know because you never know what she was taking super seriously or what she was doing with a wink because it was all performance.
I think it was so earnest.
Yeah?
No, I think her singing was so earnest.
Really?
The way I look at Tammy Faye singing is, do you ever... I'm trying to think of a good example. Like, there's people who are like, I'm good at this. This is something I'm really good at. Mm-hmm. And they take it so seriously. It's not something you could ever make a joke about. It's like, I have small children and it's like, when they think they're good at something, it's like, this is this thing I'm good at. And like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Like, I'm really good at this.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's like that. It's like, somewhere along the way, she felt like she was a really good singer, and I'm sure she got a lot of positive reinforcement for that. And it was like she just was so earnest about her singing. So that's what I see when I see Tammy singing. I see her like so serious about it, and I find it an incredibly endearing way. Yeah,
yeah. And I also think, I don't know about you, but I think that the funniest people in the world are the people who take themselves super seriously.
Absolutely.
And so that's something I wanted to ask about too, in terms of the tone of the movie, because you're working with Jessica Chastain, who's like committed years of her life to producing this, to give this incredible, now Oscar winning performance that's just brilliant. And it seems like when I watch interviews with her, she was really looking at Tammy Faye, who is this campy persona, from a grounded perspective. But I know you like to have fun on set, and you know Tammy Faye is like this like big comedic character. So I wonder, like, when you're doing certain takes, like, are you laughing? Like, are you in Village laughing at this? Or
never,
are you kind of like,
never.
Really?
No, not really? Even, no, not even a little bit. Swear to
okay.
God. Swear to God.
So
not
this was
even
this was approached as a drama. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's sort of true of everything. With the exception of something like what we did together, where like we're trying to get laughs.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to get like there, you know, cheeseburgers and stuff like that. Like watching Vanessa do her thing, you're cracking up. But with most of the stuff I do, I'm certainly not laughing out loud. And there were some funny moments in Tammy Faye that I thought were funny that probably other people don't. Like, I think it's funny when like Jim is in the sound recording booth and they can't hear him and they're like, he's like, they need him to turn on the thing.
Yeah, that seems like something you would love. Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that I think is funny, just the sort of like the foible of that he's trying to like get her and they can't hear her. They're like, we can't hear you, you know?
Yeah.
But no, there was never a moment where I really mean this, where we laughed at them even for 1 second.
Yeah, because that might take them out of it. Yeah.
You know what was funny? But again, only in the way of that it was really endearing, was when she's in the back of the Jeep wearing that white mink, the white fur coat and the white hat.
Yes, yes, yes.
That was funny because she's so, her outfit in that moment is so insane and so not in, like, it's such a random outfit. They're out like in the field and they're all wearing like, you know, hunting jackets or whatever. And she's wearing this like glamorous fur and fur hat. And he asks her if she's cold. And she's like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm covered in fur. Those little moments made me laugh, but never again, never in this way of like, oh my God, isn't Tammy Faye ridiculous? No, never.
And you know, what's funny is there's funny things in the movie too. And what I'm saying by that is like, When Andrew Garfield and her are having that insane argument at the end of the movie, which is sort of like a marriage ending argument, and she's saying, well, you need to be a man, Jim. And he goes, I am a man.
And when he says, and drinking and soda pop.
He's killing that scene.
Buying minks and drinking soda pop.
Soda pop. Come on, you were in Village, you chuckling.
But it's not funny. It's quotable. It's quotable. It's quotable. When she's like, a woman needs a man and a relationship.
I am a man.
You're a boy.
Yeah. He is terrific in this movie. I think he's my favorite actor. He is so good in this.
Yeah. Yes. He really is. He is.
There's just like the chemistry between them too, because there is like in the beginning of the movie, there is like a real romantic and sexual chemistry between them that you feel like, yes, these are two people that absolutely must get married because, you know, whatever it is that they believe, maybe God has called them together or they're actually genuinely physically attracted to each other. That's so well drawn in the movie. And then as it goes, there is this question of like, is this man gay? Like, what do you think was the Jim Baker deal?
He has stated that he is not gay and that those allegations are false. And I don't feel like it's my place to say that's then. So it's like, I feel very uncomfortable. No.
It's your place. Can I say something as a gay man? It's your place. I'm saying it. Well, as a gay man, I'm saying it's your place, Michael.
Make sure we get this, guys. It certainly would make sense, you know, like it certainly would track if he were, but he says he's not. And he is remarried now to another, he has another wife who sort of looks a lot like Tammy Faye.
Oh, really?
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Blonde and made up.
There's so much, and we spoke about the costumes, like, and there's so much pageantry in this. I wonder, like, in the costumes that Tammy Faye was wearing, and obviously in the hair and makeup, Oscar winning, is that a lot of stuff? Like, for example, that white outfit, is that like a swing that we're taking in terms of the costume design, or are we looking back and are we seeing like this is stuff that she actually wore and recreating?
She wore that.
She really wore that on. Yes. And do we know if it was from that actual moment?
No, not from that. That actual moment, I don't think is a real moment. That's a made up.
Okay,
moment.
Well,
but I think she's wearing that on one of her album covers. One of her like Christmas albums, she's wearing that outfit. But yeah, they did we had a lot of fun with costumes and makeup and production design and cinematography, sort of charting the progression of the look of the movie from the 50s to the 90s, and this sort of the ways that the colors change, that the ways that the clothing changes, the way that, you know, it's like the, you know, so that everything sort of slowly gets more technicolor as the movie goes on, and there's sort of a pastel period, the sort of the 70s or this sort of more pastel, lighter feeling, and then we get into the 80s and it's the more like harsh primary colors, and the angles are very sharp, and that's where the padded shoulders come in and all that kind of stuff. So it's, as someone who loves clothes, I don't know if you know this, Matt, but I do love clothes.
You're a well-dressed man.
I'm interested in fashion and how clothing, you know, how fashion, you know, just what goes into making clothes and stuff. So it was really fun for me to kind of take part in that. And they were, you know, Jessica and Mitchell Travers, the costume designer, you know, were very, very meticulous about like planning every little wardrobe.
Yeah. I'm not surprised to hear that you're into it, because honestly, like, you're so great with character. And I feel like, especially when I worked with you, like, the clothes really brought the character like I was playing to life. And in the show that we did together, there's so much attention to detail on the clothing. So I'm not surprised to hear that it's something that you are that you think closely about. It's fun.
I love plays. I love theater. And so to me, I think of what movies as it's a similar approach to a play, which is like when you go to a play and you leave the play, you want to be like, and the sets were amazing. And those costumes and da da da. You want to talk about every little thing.
Yeah.
And you want to notice every little thing. And so I sort of like, you know, I like it when I have a project where we can have fun with the costumes and we can talk about it in that way.
How long was this shoot?
I think 7 weeks.
That's not that much time.
No, not at all. No, it's a small, I mean, relatively speaking, it was a small film.
Yeah. And also to cover that span of time in that amount of time is really
totally
tough.
Yeah. And it was a very ambitious thing in terms of obviously like all of the makeup, the way in which these time periods are changing on a daily basis. You know, she's going from the 50s to the 60s to the 70s to the 80s and then all the way into the 90s. And so there was all this stuff with the makeup. So like every day had to be one decade. You couldn't do like 70s in the morning and then the 80s in the afternoon, you know?
Right.
Yeah. But 7 weeks.
That's pretty wild.
That's fast.
Listen.
Are we done?
No.
Oh, okay.
The way you said
listen made it be like, listen, this has been great.
So that was a listen that's transitioning into, if it's okay with you, a segment on this podcast. So I have a segment on this podcast called But How Is It a Queer Narrative?
Ooh.
I basically, every single movie that I talk about here on this here podcast, I have to, as a sort of queer performer and podcast host, examine how it is a queer narrative. It wasn't very difficult for this film, but I still did endeavor. Matt Stillo, if you could hit my club track, please. Here we go. I'm going in. Sequins. Maximalism. Cherry Jones. Discovery of self through the discovery of makeup. Having Jerry Falwell sort of look at you funny. Theme parks. Uppers, babe, and downers too. Diet Coke. The humanization of the other. Tickle fights. Okay, cut the track. So that's sort of my ways in which I could call this film a queer narrative.
Well, what about the fact that it's based on a documentary that was made by Fenton Bailey and Randy Barbato, who do everything.
Drag Race.
Who drew Drag Race.
Yeah, that's actually a huge, huge deal.
Well, she's a gay icon, right?
Yeah, she's been done on Drag Race. They do a snatch game, which is like, you know, the fake match game, and they do like celebrity impersonations. And she is done by drag queens constantly.
Because she is sort of a, you know, there's a hot messness to her that I think is very, she's just who she is, so big and so open and so earnest, and she's ridiculed.
Yeah, she's faces a lot of adversity.
Yeah, she's someone who's made fun of and who's teased and who's ridiculed, and so I think it's understandable.
She is unapologetically overdrawn, and she's also equal parts comedy and tragedy, which is, I think, why the gay community, if I were to put it in really simply, really embraces her. But I wanted to jump out of that little segment just to talk about how this film really does delve into her allyship to the gay community and how difficult that was at a time, you know, in like the 70s and 80s where, you know, we were pretty much expressly being told that being gay was an evil and a sin and damnable to hell. Especially now it feels extra prescient because there's this weird theocratic revolution happening, it seems, again. And I'm wondering if you can speak a little bit to just like how you guys tackled her allyship in this movie, because I think the most important and the centerpiece scene of the film is her interview with Steve Peters. So I'm just wondering if you can speak a little bit to that.
You know, it is very important, and it is kind of probably in a lot of ways, I think what Jessica in particular felt like made the movie important, really important,
right.
Was that at a time, like what you said, at a time when it was not just unpopular, it was not done to embrace gay, the gay community, especially within the Christian, with, you know, the Christian movement or whatever, the evangelical movement, and AIDS was happening, and it was, you know, it was being completely ignored and swept under the rug and what have you. Tammy Faye was true to her doctrine that God and Jesus were all loving and kindness and that that should that there that couldn't be parsed out, that that had to be a universal thing. And so I think she was authentic to Christian principles. And so in tackling it, I think that it was, I'll speak for myself, it wasn't so much that she was such a champion for gay rights. It was more about her belief system that everybody was deserving of love.
Right.
It wasn't activism. It wasn't really activism. It was really more just her being true to her Christian principles and recognizing in something that was hypocritical. So wanting to stand up for it because she saw that it was hypocritical that the rest of the church was ignoring that.
And that makes a lot of sense that it was more about consistency than it was about like actual crusadership or whatever it is. But like, in doing that, it was.
It was very, had a huge impact on the gay community to have her doing that. I think that if you'd asked her, you know, we've talked about this. I think that her actual feelings about it were sort of like, I still love you, even though you're gay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't think it was, I think that was more her position was like, even though I probably don't think that what you're doing is whatever,
yeah,
I still love you and I still am going to treat you as I would anybody, even though you're gay.
Right.
As opposed to who care, you know, as opposed to who gives a shit.
Yeah. As opposed to I'm an enthusiastic supporter and I'm attending drag shows.
Right. Exactly.
Here's me front row cheering on the girls. Yes, right. Yes, exactly. Yes. Do you know if Jim Baker, who is still with us, do you know if he has seen the movie?
I don't think he has. His children have.
Yeah, probably would be a tough sit.
Yeah, his children have seen the film.
And they were involved?
They were involved, and I don't want to speak for them, but I think they had mixed feelings, understandably. I think that on the one hand, they felt happy that it was such a sympathetic portrayal of Tammy Faye, though I think that they felt we got certain things wrong and that was upsetting to them. And, you know, I think that they have a lot of mixed feelings about it, which I totally understand. But I don't think Jim Baker's seen the film. But yeah, he's still doing it. He's got a TV show and he sells like 50-gallon buckets of soup and stuff for the end of days. He's like a big apocalypse person.
Oh, he thinks it's coming.
It's like corn chowder and stuff like that. I don't know if you like
corn chowder. I love corn chowder, to be honest with you. What's your favorite soup? Just to put a pin in this conversation for a second to ask about your favorite soup.
Well, and I had something else I was going to say too. Hopefully I'll definitely answer the soup question and then let me see. And then I want to come back to what I was saying before.
Yeah.
My favorite soup would be, I'm trying to picture myself eating soup. Well, I love a good gazpacho.
Really cold soup?
I love a good gazpacho.
Okay.
I love a good chicken noodle soup.
Okay, so sort of back to basics.
Back to basics. What about you? What's your favorite soup, Matt?
Well, I'm sort of the seas, so I love a Manhattan clam chowder, New England clam chowder, even a Boston clam chowder, which
You're
exists.
Of the seas?
I'm of the seas. I'm a Pisces, rising Pisces, Greek boy from Long Island, Michael, so I'm sort of the seas, you know?
I see.
I'm of the chowders, of the seas.
You are very boaty.
You feel this way?
Yes.
Okay.
There is a boatiness to you.
I will take it, and I will do what I can with that in sort of my brand going forward.
Yeah.
Now, what were you saying about your Oscar-winning film before I interrupted you about soup?
Well, we were talking about Tammy and
sure were.
Oh darn it! Oh, you asked me if her family saw the movie.
Oh yeah, if Jim Baker had seen the movie. You know, I feel like if I was told that Andrew Garfield was playing me, I don't think I would care if it was a negative portrayal or if maybe I wouldn't be happy with it. I'd have to check that out. You know what I mean?
Oh, I know what I was going to say. I shouldn't even say. Maybe he has seen it. I bet he's got HBO Max. Maybe they're just like, come on, let's just watch it.
I will
say, though, that the one of the nicest compliments I have received about the film is when people who are very skeptical of the movie and how that we are going to be portraying, you know, the Christian Southern Christian community and evangelicals, and that it's going to be kind of a big ha ha, you know, a sort of a big a takedown or anything, that there's a sense of, no, it was actually very authentic. It was very accurate feeling, and that sort of pleasantly surprised to see that there's no attempt to kind of point a finger or be like, hey, look at how, you know, how silly this is or something like that. It's taken very seriously, which was important to us.
Yeah. I mean, the movie is not about zealotry. It's about this woman who was, you know, it's about this woman in her life. It's not about like, you know, how the Christianity is evil and corruptive. Right. And like, it's not about that.
No, it's not. It's about her and her conviction of her faith.
Yeah. It's a film about love.
And that she was kind of a martyr. And it's a little bit about, there is a little bit too about, and this kind of evolved through the making of the movie, but there's also a little bit about revisiting a moment of our past where we rushed to judgment.
Right.
And we sort of didn't like the way she looked. We didn't like the way she sounded. She wore too much makeup. She had too many pairs of shoes or whatever. It all sort of like bumped up against our sense of the way someone should look or sound, or we enjoyed, there was a real, people really enjoyed kind of taking them down and taking her down, and she was a laughingstock. Yeah. And we didn't really take a beat to look at the substance of her. And so right. I think there's an aspect too of the way in which our culture does do that, rush to judgment.
Yeah.
And so we were talking about Britney Spears and other sort of, you know, examples in the media where the sort of, there's this sort of frenzy, this feeding frenzy, and maybe we're not taking the time to look a little deeper.
Yeah. It feels like this is one of many films as of late and television series that are sort of looking at pop culture figures of a certain time and sort of trying to flesh out a reality because, you know, whatever the media narrative at the time was relatively damning or very scant and vague
and sort of sexist. And sort
absolutely.
Of and very sexist. Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember I saw the movie. I actually saw the movie with Sudie Green. We went to theaters when it first came out. And I remember we were leaving and, you know, I think we all thought we knew a lot about Tammy Faye Baker. And we all left being like, well, there was a lot of things about her that we didn't know. And, you know, I think that my parents said the same thing. I think most people that see this film are going to be illuminated about her and feel a real sympathy and empathy for who she was and what she went through. And also a fun big character.
And it's, yeah. And then there's this great performance by Jessica Chastain.
Terrific performance by one of the best.
And what, you know, what, for those of us that love acting and actors and, you know, her performance is a gift to those of us that
truly
love a great performance. She's giving 100,000% of herself. And if you love a great actor and this is one of those things where it's sort of like, you know, the sports equivalent of when an athlete scores 100 points in a game or something. She's giving every ounce of herself to this performance. And for that reason alone, I think it's a special film. By the way, Andrew as well. Andrew is
brilliant
because Jessica, you know, Andrew had his other movie. And so sort of a lot of the attention on Andrew went on to his Tick, Tick, Boom, which he's fantastic in that.
So
and,
good.
But Andrew's performance is also, you know, he completely transforms himself in the film. And both of them are just doing incredible work.
As is Cherry Jones.
And it's incredibly well directed. I mean, the direction
absolutely
is just, yeah.
It's absolute top notch. And of course, see the movie for Jessica, but see this movie for the direction. We are truly happy that you were joined us today, Michael. I mean, I love
blessed
this movie. Blessed. And I should not be so afraid of the word blessed. We are blessed and highly favored here today. Michael Showalter, I love this movie. You know I do. And
thank you, Matt.
I'm a great fan and admirer of yours, as you also
and,
know.
And the feelings are mutual.
Well, there we have it.
Thanks for having me on the podcast. You're a great podcast toast.
Thank you so
see
much.
How
and
I did
first
that?
And foremost,
see how I did that? Podcast toast.
Podcast toast.
Podcast toast.
Podcast toast. And I'm going to try to incorporate more boatiness into the podcast going forward.
I kind of would like it if you could. Yeah. Yeah. Like okay. Maybe like a little boat hat or a boat hat or some boat shoes or.
I'll figure it out.
You'll figure it out.
Thanks, Michael.
Bye, Matt.
Bye. You're the best.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining the HBO Max Movie Club. The movies we talked about today are currently available on HBO Max. Check the show notes for exact streaming dates. And don't forget to join the club every other week. Send in your hot takes for all things Julia Roberts and Mona Lisa Smile with hashtag MaxMovieClub to @HBOMaxMovies on Twitter and Instagram. If you haven't already subscribed, rated, or reviewed HBO Max Movie Club, please do so on the iHeartRadio app, HBO Max, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you might get your podcasts. HBO Max Movie Club is a production of HBO Max and iHeartRadio, hosted by me, Matt Rogers. Our executive producer is Matt Stillo. Our producer is Sierra Kaiser. And today's episode was written and researched by Kate Voss. Thanks, everybody.